Hello, I'm Paddy O'Donnell, and this is The Crimologist from Farrow and Ball, the podcast where paint and colour meet life. In my work as a colour expert for Farrow and Ball, I see every day the power that colour has to transform, not just a room, but a life.
The world is colourful. I always see life in colour.
My first memory when it comes to colour is red. I thought her dress was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen, and I wanted to live in red.
And that's why we've created this series, to explore how colour guides us in our heads, in our hearts, in our life stories.
Do you know, I've got glasses that fit each colour room. So these are my pink ones in my pink room. Got green ones over there. Neutral in my bedroom. Not that you're going up there, Patrick.
Why not?
The names are quite funny, aren't they?
They are quite funny.
What's the funniest name, do you think? Dead Salmon's quite funny.
I've never done my life story through colour, and everyone should do this.
This week, I'm really honoured to introduce my guest, Eric Underwood. Having trained at the American School of Ballet, Eric joined the Royal Ballet in London in 2006. Since his departure in 2017, Eric's career includes occasional modelling and he's even developed skin tone ballet pumps for people of colour. He is an articulate and passionate advocate for greater diversity in dance and fashion. Hello, Eric. Thank you very much for inviting us into your beautiful home. I mean, we're in the lovely Chiltern Hills, Chiltern Valleys.
Thank you for coming.
You've moved in here recently, I believe.
In late September.
Late September.
I'm basically getting my head around rural life and living on a farm, and I'm loving it. I'm learning a lot.
Are you?
Yeah.
There is a lot to learn.
Yeah.
Mainly get some Wellington boots on.
Yeah. Okay.
So we're in this beautiful room. So this is your snug but slash kind of library.
Yes.
Because you've got this whole wall of oak bookshelves. And you've got this lovely kind of soft white on the walls. I mean, it's a really cozy space.
Pretty much every evening I'm in here either reading a book or talking on the phone or surfing the internet. Yeah.
There's like, I mean, the minute we came through the door, I just, the smell of wood smoke, it was so evocative and just so perfect.
You know,
sort of on a chilly day.
Yeah.
It's heaven. So we're going to dip into your childhood memories. So as this is all about colour, we wanted to kind of go, which colour feels significant for you from a childhood memory?
So I looked at the colour chart and I felt like borrowed light was the colour that resonated heaviest with me as far as my childhood memories go. I think of my mother a lot when I think of that. My mother had a light blue t-shirt that she would wear often when it was time to go to bed, and we would be in the bed, and I had my own room, but she would often have me sit in the bed with her, and she would sing, "Eric, it's just me and you against the world," which when I think about as an adult is a little odd because I have a brother and a sister. But
yeah, it was a special moment between
it
you and your mom.
It was a special moment between us.
Yeah.
But my mother gave me so much unconditional love. And the way she loved me was in a way in which I was able to make mistakes. I wasn't forbidden to do anything wrong. And how do I say that? I think the way she positioned love dictated how I would be able to receive and see love in the future as an adult. So today, I wouldn't really be accepting love that wasn't full and generous like my mother gave me.
Is your mother always on your shoulder, even to this day, kind of going, "No, you can do that"?
Absolutely. Or on my phone. I'm surprised she's not calling right now.
You know, you mentioned that song that your mother used to sing to you.
Do you
know, can you remember what the song is? And can you remember how it goes?
Interesting, because she sang it in the bed. I remember the end. She would say, "There's apples and oranges in Sleepy Land, sugar-coated candy in Sleepy Land. But if I was you, Eric, I would go to sleep."
So essentially, it's a really nice way of you shut up and go to sleep.
Exactly.
Mothers are so cunning. Does she know that? Does she know this colour significant? Do you ever talk about colour? Do you ever talk about her t-shirt?
We do. We do. I spoke about it with her. And I think memory is a funny thing because I can say something was really significant to me where she's saying, "Oh, that wasn't a big deal."
Right,
but she was an adult then and I was a child, and lying there was hugely significant to me. And her just saying, "You're a heartbreaker, you can do anything, you can be anything," very American dream kind of way.
And your brother and sister on the bedroom door going, "Let us in,
us in." I think I was the creative child.
Oh, okay.
So there was definitely incentive to push me towards creativity. I definitely needed support. I needed emotional support. and even needed more emotional support because I was often in very foreign environments. But with this voice in the back of my head saying, you're amazing, you're great, you can do no wrong, the world is your oyster.
Which is fantastically powerful, even from a young age, isn't it? If you've got that encouragement behind you and that voice.
Absolutely.
Help pushing you along and going, it's all going to be okay. You can do whatever you want. Don't let anybody get in your way.
Childhood had difficult moments for me, like everyone. But during those difficult moments, I felt supported.
Yeah.
I would say it was incredibly reassuring.
So just kind of going a little bit more deeply into Borrowed Light, which is this beautiful sort of pale, clean, optimistic blue. Big open skies and kind of brightness. It's kind of...
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of daylight, isn't it? It's kind of, do you carry that colour with you? Do you use it in your clothing? Would you use it in your interiors?
I don't think in specific it's a colour I've carried with me, but it's definitely a feeling. So when you say optimistic, it definitely resonates with me. I think of boundless creativity, boundless achievement. I think of... Even when you say big open skies, I see endless possibility. And my mother saying, you can be anything you want to be. Reach for the stars. You can do anything you want to do. And just sort of having boundless love.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's just had such an influence on the way I'm able to see love from other people. So I think of a great amount of space. So when I look at the sky and I see a light blue in the sky, I just think it's incredibly spacious and there is no end point.
Yeah.
So I think that that's something that has affected me all my life, just not having an end point, not having a stop.
And that's what's so lovely, because actually even here, because we're in this valley and, you know, these beautiful Chiltern Hills, and actually there are big skies here, which is quite rare in the UK.
Yeah.
You have got big skies here, which is lovely. So I'm looking out the window and I'm seeing Borrowed Light and it's going on and on and on.
We can go through here. It's a bit of like a little Harry Potter moment.
Amazing.
This is the guest room, yes.
It's a huge treat, isn't it? Because you kind of get the atmosphere. There's a real sense of the history of the building in
this.
I mean, it's kind of got that kind of really sweet sort of pale blue. This lovely kind of Jacobean four poster.
Yes.
Beams everywhere.
And modesty curtains.
Or draft curtains, depending. If we're in Britain and everything's really drafty and chilly. It's lovely. We're moving on to your second colour, and that's about the colour of your youth.
Yes. So I've chosen off-black, and I was born in Washington, D.C., so it was where I grew up was probably a 98% black community. So my point of identity was never being black. I was Eric, because everyone else was black too. And when I started to dance and I got into the ballet, I remember being in a line and a girl saying, oh, the black guy's really good. And I turned around and I was looking for him because... I didn't realize she was talking about me because that had never been my point of identity before.
Yeah.
So I feel like at that point, I realized that I was no longer Eric and I was the black guy who was dancing ballet. And that didn't necessarily have a negative or a positive connotation attached to it. It was just how you were viewed.
But it's kind of interesting that awareness.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it was negative or not coming from other people, but because I grew up in a community where everyone was black and I had this mother who just sort of showered me with love, it never felt like being black was a negative thing. It felt like, oh, well, I'm Eric and everyone else happens to be black. And if maybe someone has some sort of derogatory thoughts about that, they're completely mistaken. I'm fantastic. She told me. So, It's always been a bit that way.
We all need a bit of your mother in all of our lives, I think, don't we? She sounds an extraordinary woman.
Yeah, she's great. But I think her telling me those things, she wasn't being extraordinary. She was preparing me for the world. And she would have been doing me sort of an injustice by not preparing me in that way, particularly because of the career I chose. So going into that career, feeling really self-assured about being black and not feeling like it was problematic was really helpful because I was always a minority in that space. And I felt like people didn't necessarily know what to do. But because I was unapologetically myself, they were more inclined to just go along.
When did you start dancing?
So I danced with my sister on the porch and we would dance to the top 8 songs at 8 o'clock and compete with our neighbors when we were 3 years old, pretty much up until about the age of 11 with our mothers judging objectively. And then I started ballet dancing when I was 13, but I had already danced just like street dancing in my neighborhood before then. Does that count?
Of course it counts.
Okay.
Of course it counts.
So I started when I was 3.
Were you quite a good dancer when you were 3? Yes, I was. My mother told me so.
No, I always enjoyed dancing, and I had rhythm quite naturally. So when I got to dancing ballet, I was able to implement lots of what I had learned before I ever learned any trained dancing into the ballet.
Yeah.
So I went to ballet boarding school when I was 14. I went to the School of American Ballet, and I lived there. So I left home and moved to New York City and lived in this boarding school with other children who wanted to dance.
And how many black dancers were there?
It was a school of 500, and there were two boys and one girl that were black.
Really?
Yeah. Ballet in particular can be years and years behind the rest of the world.
Can we talk a little bit more about the colour off black?
Yes.
I mean, for us, off black, it's actually one of our original 57 colours when we developed the colour chart in the early 90s. The 57th of the 57. And it's this beautiful soft black. It's not a pitch black. It's not a true black. It's almost charcoal in a way. So it has this lovely softness to it. Yeah. So it's a good colour.
So even just reading that, off black. So I've always been black. Maybe me being in a balletic atmosphere was off. That was something that was very different. That was an abstract thing for the atmosphere. But my actual relationship with being black, I felt quite secure in. So when I talk about being aware of being black in that environment, you have to understand that I didn't know any white people before I danced ballet. I think often what people try and do when they're in situations that are foreign to them is assimilate. And because, again, I came from a background where I never felt like I had to assimilate to something else, I didn't reach for unattainable things. So I never relaxed my hair or tried to, I don't know, appear white. It just wasn't a thing that was attainable for me. So why would I do that? That's outrageous. I'll just be off black. It's really cool.
Yeah.
In America, there isn't as much of a classist society. There is a racist society, but not classist. And I suppose with class, you can change yourself to appear one way if you're not actually that way. Whereas with race, you can't.
Moving on, Eric, we're moving to your third choice. And this colour is all set around your kind of defining decade.
Yes. I chose slipper satin, and that is the colour that ballet shoes are traditionally made in.
That slightly sort of blushed ivory.
Yes.
Satin.
Exactly. And I think people would see that as a colour that represents purity and being ethereal. And those are things that within the space of ballet have always been quite challenging for me, because ballet shoes are made in flesh tone. And that is often a flesh tone of a white person. And there weren't any for black people. So I was in Italy on tour with Roberto Bolle and friends, an Italian dancer who was from La Scala. And I was quite used to just going to the makeup shop, buying some makeup and pancaking my shoes. And my partner was Northern Irish, so she was really pale. And often what would happen is my shoe would brush against her, and then she'd have this sort of brown spot on her. So it's quite problematic, really.
Yeah.
And I was in Calabria, and I ran out of makeup, and not thinking anything of it, I then went on Instagram and just tagged all the ballet companies and said, if you make more than one color of flesh, I'll love you forever. And then I got the block company came back and said, we're major fans of yours. We would love to collaborate on a color. And then we made tan shoes for people of color, loads of different hues of brown. So the color of like ballet white, I've always seen as quite challenging if you aren't white. So I was able to change that. And Christian Louboutin makes shoes. And for a while, there were the popular ballet flats that women were wearing, then made ballet slippers for women in all the same colors. It seemed like a really impactful thing that I did, but not because I wanted to take a stand. I just ran out of makeup and thought, oh, it'd be great if you had shoes in my color. And it made a big change in the world. So that's why I chose that color.
So it's kind of really interesting, because obviously a similar argument has been applied to foundation. For
Oh, really?
People with different skin tones, yeah. So I think MAC did
Yes.
loads of stuff. And then even kind of the basic things, you know, the minor injury with the skin plaster.
Yes.
Again, it was just in white, fleshy, pink. You know, that was the only thing. Do you got a sticking plaster or something?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
a little
yeah.
And that's all changed too. So, yeah, it's really amazing. And well done you there.
Oh,
but
yeah,
you said
thanks.
You didn't do it from a political point.
No, not at all. I did it
It's a convenient point.
Yeah, it was a convenience thing that had a huge political influence, but I was completely unaware of that because I had normalized painting my shoes so that I could be in the same space as everyone else. I had normalized that.
So what colour are yours? Is it Eric Slipper? Is it, you
They're
know?
Called Underwood Tan.
Are they?
Yes. After the shoes came out, I got, surprisingly, lots of Christmas messages from mothers who had gotten the shoes for their children saying, oh, this is amazing. My child has shoes in their color now. They feel like they're a part of it. And this has always been something that they struggled with. I hadn't really realized how many other people had that same problem.
Yeah.
I think also, too, you know, we underestimate, because I was in the Royal Ballet and I was in this position of huge visibility, I underestimated how much me being unapologetically Black gave permission for other children that are students to be equally the same. So them seeing that shoe, not thinking, oh, okay, I've got to get another pair for my... They go, oh, okay, actually, this is for me. They even make shoes for me. This is great. I belong here. Some of the beams are actually quite low, so I've walked into one there that knocked me out and I had concussion. But it's gorgeous.
Yes, people who don't know you or have never seen you, physically seen you, you're tall, you're exactly. Very elegant. Yes, it's probably not the most height-friendly house.
You see, I put a little sign here
yep.
that says, your head is in danger, duck.
See, it's fine for me because I'm a short arse. So I have no, so this should be my house. We'll swap.
Yeah.
You can go and live with my mother and I'll move in here. We're yes. moving into your last colour, and I love this because this is such a leap from where we've just come from.
Yeah.
So this is kind of a colour for where you are now.
So I've chosen yellow cake because it appears to be the brightest, most shining colour. And I feel like I'm at a point in life now where I've learned lots of lessons. I've lived quite a colourful life, and I have lots to give back to people, which is what I'm doing now. I'm writing a book, and it's really exciting. And in this book, I'm talking a lot about my experience, but also what I'm diving into is who Eric is outside of being a dancer and being accepted without this sort of, you know, with ballet in particular, you're always reaching for this very unachievable perfection and trying to achieve this very flawless exterior and interior person. And now I'm trying to work out who I am without that desire. And it's more about acceptance and accepting how I shine brightly just as Eric, not the ballet dancer, not the Black guy good at ballet, not the model, not the none of that. Just Eric as he is. So I feel like that's why I chose yellow cake.
The everyday Eric.
Yes, everyday Eric. And Eric that isn't striving for perfection. Eric that's striving for self-acceptance.
Okay. That's true. And I mean, just to let people know about yellow cake too, I mean, there's no shrinking violet here with the real Eric.
Yeah.
Because it's a full-on pop kind of 60s kind of acidic explosion of a yellow. It's really almost luminous.
Yes.
Isn't it? Named after the, well, I suppose Americans are really good at baking. We like baking over here, but, you know, kind of this American iced, you know, sort of luminous sort of yellow cake, you know, yeah, yellow sponge, yeah, yeah. Yellow frosting, all of that. You know, it's not subtle.
No,
and I love that.
On a plate.
So you're demure on the dark store and just like an explosion, you know, in yeah. the everyday. It's a really optimistic colour, isn't it?
Yes.
It's in our archive palette. So if people say, I can't see that on the colour chart, we also have this secondary palette called the archive palette, which are all colours that have retired from the main collection, but they go into what we call the archive. They just moved off the main colour chart list. Right, this is a really abstract question, Eric.
Okay.
So if I was asking you to do a figurative dance to yes. signify the colour yellow cake, what would it be?
I would imagine it's very raw.
Okay.
It would be very unfiltered and expressive. So going back to the idea of dancing, I found my best performances were when people witnessed me dancing and expressing joy, not when I performed for people. So I feel like the color yellow cake is a very joyous and bright color. And when someone witnesses you embodying joy, embodying lightness and brightness, as opposed to you presenting it to them, it's really powerful. So it's about allowing myself to sort of shine from the inside out as I am. And just having other people witness that and want to be a part of that and be attracted to that shine.
So what would you be wearing for the stars?
Do you know what? I might do it in the nude. Because okay. that right there is full acceptance of who you are. Maybe I wouldn't put on a costume. Maybe I would allow myself to shine as I was born.
And what better way to do it?
Exactly.
And you'd be using a whole stage for this color, wouldn't you? You'd
exactly.
be wanting every square foot.
Exactly. All the way to the back of the house.
Excellent. Well, I'd love to see that. Maybe you could do that for us here this afternoon.
I'd love to.
I love that. Yeah, I think the interesting thing about yellow cake, I mean, because obviously it was a paint color, and actually sadly, it's kind of short-lived because it's, I think, quite a difficult colour to commit to. Although there was this amazing Dutch journalist, interiors journalist, who painted his whole hall and stairs in it in gloss, and it looked amazing. But for a lot of people, it's quite a strong colour. So I think it's kind of a little accent colour. So a really beautiful chair, you know, painted in this, in an otherwise quite demure, calm space, can look really, really lovely. Would you use that anywhere? I mean, I'm not saying, would you paint your kitchen in it? Because that's probably a step too far. But could you use that anywhere, do you think?
I think that I could use it in one of the rooms because each room sort of signifies something. And I wouldn't mind going into a room that signified joy and brightness and lots of light. As I was saying upstairs, you know, the room that's completely open, we've called it the love room because it, for us, signifies love and a big open space that's full of emotion and happiness. I'd love to have a room I could go into and be sort of inspired and feel joyous and feel bright and shine.
And take your kit off and dance.
I'm not sure the heating is good enough for that.
Yeah, I remember you saying there's no central heating
here.
It's all log fires. It's all very old school. So, Eric, thank you so much. Those four colours have just been brilliant, and it's really lovely hearing your story through colour. But at this point, we want to gift you a colour based on all the lovely stories you created. I kind of came up with this, and I hope it kind of resonates for you, but I wanted to gift you a colour called Skylight, so we can call it Eric's Sky. And essentially, this is an extension of Borrowed Light, so we've kind of gone full circle here.
Oh, wow.
Because the light is more generous, even more generous with Skylight. And this is all about your experience. It's passing on your mother's love and encouragement. But you're doing that. You're giving that to others. You know, you're giving others a voice. So you're passing, you know, all that stuff that your mother did for you when you were a child, going, go and do it. You're using where you are now or where you have been to allow other people to do it. Going, look, there are no barriers here.
Yes.
Go and do it. This is you, you know, down to the ballet pump, you know, down to anything. You know, I was a black soloist dancer for the Royal Ballet.
Yes.
This is an open road, kids. Yeah. Go and find it.
I love it.
So Skylight is just a slightly deeper blue to the Borrowed Light. So, you know, we've gone full circle, but it felt quite, you know, pertinent.
That's great.
For you. So, dear Mr. Eric Underwood, here you go. Here's your little pot of Eric Sky.
This is beautiful. It does have a very similar energy to being boundless, like borrowed light. And that's something that really resonates with me. My mother would be very proud.
That you're carrying her mantle and taking it forth.
Exactly. Yeah, this is really powerful. Thank you.
Well, it's been really lovely sort of being here, being in your home, seeing you adapting to the brutalities of the British countryside. So thank you, Eric.
Thank you.
It's been really, really lovely. If you'd like to find out more about Eric, you can visit him at Eric Underwood on Instagram. You can also follow us at Farrow and Ball on Instagram. Come and find me. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. And of course, you can discover all the colours we've talked about today on our website. My guest next week is the fashion designer, Lucinda Chambers. The Cremologist is a Farrow and Ball and Feast Collective production. The producer is Sarah Cudden. Until the next one, goodbye and hugs.